and welcome to another edition of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are in your ears thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, this week is what used to be termed as People's Social Calendar, also known as, well, the fixtures are published. But instead of the usual excitement and planning trips around the country to see our heroes, we're instead trying to work out exactly when we'll be allowed back into the stadiums. On Monday night, the club held a forum to explain how it will work once it's green-lighted to allow some fans back in. But with the public confidence on the floor currently, many still don't want to leave their front doors. In other news, and much happier news, the club has announced that skipper Lewis Dunk has ended speculation about his future by signing a new five-year contract we'll keep him to the Amex until the end of the 24-25 season. To discuss all this and more, we're delighted to welcome back a man who's seen many strange and trying times at the club. It's Albion's Head of Media and Communications, Mr. Paul Camlin. Welcome back, Paul. It's been a while since you've actually been on the radio. Obviously, we saw you on the Shirt of Our Years back in the summer. But, I mean, how you been? How's your lockdown been?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Just really, really busy and evening hour, evening AD. Yeah, it wasn't too bad at all. Very busy. Obviously, once we got into the return to play planning and that phase, it was really busy. And then, as you know, AD, privileged enough to see some of the games.
Yeah.
I think the most surreal moment was watching the champions at the Amex with about 200 people in the stadium, and it felt like watching the world champions in your back garden almost. that was a real surreal moment, I've got to say.
It really was. I mean, we'll talk about this later on in the show, but I mean, you know, just, you know, when you're playing teams like Man United and Liverpool and Arsenal, and you're walking up, normally there's a big vibe in the city and the excitement about the games, and just walking up to the stadium and there's just nothing. And it's just such a surreal anti-climax almost.
I think it was right, and everybody wanted to get the season finished, and obviously it was a big success for us in terms of a record points total, you know, in the Premier League, matched our highest finish in the Premier League, and I think we finished really strongly, particularly with that. You know, it was great to go to Burnley and get that win, not least because of the prize money, the additional prize money the club received, but you know, I think it was a success for us on the pitch. You can't term it a success off the pitch, really, until we can start to get fans back in. It's not the same. You know, Glenn Murray, listening to him on TalkSport this week, Paul Barber, listening to him Monday night, you know, everybody wants the fans back in. It isn't the same. I mean, there's some, as I said, surreal and wonderful moments in terms of where you see and hear things you wouldn't otherwise see or hear. I remember listening to one of the photographers talk about the Leno injury and saying the Arsenal players were all staring at him because they could hear the click of his shutter taking pictures of him injured on the floor. And the Arsenal players were sort of casting these dirty looks in his vicinity because he was taking pictures of it. They felt that wasn't right. But obviously in a normal stadium environment, you wouldn't be hearing the camera shutter going. So it was surreal. It was interesting as well because you really heard which Albion players were the vocal ones.
Yeah, you really did.
And I think Matty Ryan and Adam Webster would stand out as perhaps the
more vocal,
the really vocal ones. Yeah, you
really?
Know, constantly talking.
More so than Lewis Dunk, more so than the skipper.
You'd still hear Dunkey, but I think Adam Webster, you know, you've got, in my opinion, I think you've got a future captain there, potentially. Maybe not till 2025 in light of the other news today. But
Eve Bissouma was the other one that you could really have, like, really single out when you're on the pitch. But that sounds, when he's shouting, it sounds like he's taking helium. But he's been the player of the restart for me.
Yeah, I think he started just before, didn't he? He had that game at Wolves. I think he played pretty well at Sheffield United, if my memory serves me right. And he was just sort of hitting his groove. But He was, and then obviously scored that terrific goal at Burnley. The other one, just going back to what you could hear in the stadiums, I didn't hear it at the time, but I remember spotting it on social media, and I think it was, I can't remember who it was that picked up on it, but great spot by whoever it was. Alexis McAllister, I think Shelton played
Davey Proper, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then obviously hooked the ball on, and I sent that to Bruno later that week, and I was like, Bruno, can you make this out? That sounds to me like it's Alexis, and we were umming and ahhing, and we both felt that it was Alexis saying play, and obviously then that sparked the move. And interestingly, chatting with Lewis earlier today, we were talking about after he'd done his contract, the great moments, and we both spoke about Neil's goal at the Amex and what that moment would have felt like with fans in the stadium.
From my point of view, I mean, basically, obviously, when you're sitting in the press box, you're meant to show a degree of decorum, but the whole play, I actually did.
Worry, I didn't. I was up and celebrated. Obviously, you were in West Upper, I was in West Lower, but I was sat about.
But there wasn't
behind Bruno, and I had Bruce Talbot to my left. And the three of us were sort of socially distanced, sort of celebrating, not hugging each other, but virtually hugging each other, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
From where I was sat, there wasn't an awful lot of impartiality going around. It was quite funny, but that was great. But we're gonna talk about the lockdown in more detail shortly. But I mean, let's start with the headline news, and you've alluded to it there. After many media reports linking our captain with a move to a top six club, he's penned a new deal. Now, we think this is a record contract extension because
it's an annual occurrence, isn't it?
Well, we joked about it this afternoon, and he said to me, I think I've probably signed 100 years worth of contracts with Brighton, obviously, because each year. Although, actually, the last long term deal he signed, I think, was two seasons ago. Just before that West Ham game, I think was the last one. So, but yeah, I mean, look, it's a common thing. And Lewis is without question one of our best players. He's our player of the season. He's our talisman. He's the one that I think leads us on and off the pitch in many respects. And the thing I like about Lewis, and I said this to him today, is he just gets better with every season that goes by. I think And we sort of joked today because a lot of people have looked at him in the last season and said, oh, yeah, he can play a bit as well. Well, those of us that saw him in League One knew that, there's no doubt that he could play and what a good player he was. So I'm amazed he's not part of the England setup. I always have been.
We have this stuff every close season about speculation about him, so and so are interested. And I guess that everyone's sort of operating that to their own agenda, plus a few mischief makers across the
Well, I think, do you know what? I think, and just to clear this up, I think a lot of this was based on the nonsense about him not being on the front of the shop. The reason he wasn't on the front of the shop, just to sort of clarify, was because if you remember during lockdown, Lewis was involved with all the negotiations, all the talk for players together, all of that. He then went into a run of matches where he played virtually, I think, apart from maybe was it the Liverpool game, we bought him off with 10 minutes to go. He played every minute of every game. Him and Matty Ryan, they played more than anybody. And they were playing Saturday, Tuesday. So when the marketing team put in a request, we want Lewis Dunk for the front of the shop. Actually, the football side of things said, look, we need to give the kid a break. He's playing all these minutes, more than anybody else. Here's the players that, in that period, obviously, I guess Eves hadn't played the previous game. So it was nothing to do with anything like that. People love a conspiracy theory, but what total and utter nonsense that was. And we've already done the away kit pictures with him, because once the season had finished and we did the shoot for the away kit, we've done those with Dunkey. So
does he look good in yellow?
I don't know. I haven't seen him in yellow. I've seen the away kit pictures, but...
That's what I mean. No, well, the question I was going to ask, Paul...
Nice try, Al, by the way.
The question I was going to ask was, You know, we get this nonsense year in, you know, season in, season out. What how does Lewis Dunk himself deal with it?
Lewis is a bit of a joker, I think, and he just ignores it. Water off a duck's back, or water off a dunk's back, I should say. I mean, last year, the stuff about Leicester, I think that was being engineered by an agent who was trying to sort of move their player on in a sort of domino effect. Mm. If Maguire went to Man United, Lewis went to Leicester, and I think was trying to get their player into another club. And saying, well, if Dunk goes to Leicester, Brighton are going to be in for this player, so you need to hurry up and buy him. Mm-hmm. So you know, all of this stuff, I read that piece on Sunday, and I just immediately went, well, that's
rubbish.
B-O-L-L-O-C-K-S. Straight away. You know, and all my pals are texting me, oh, is Dunkey going to Chelsea? And we don't tend to comment on speculation, but no. You know, then the Argus has sort of picked it up and run a story off the back of it, and various other media outlets. It was just speculation.
I should know that Brian was actually on holiday, and it wasn't actually Brian that ran that.
No, it wasn't Brian, but I did ring Brian Sunday night, knowing he was going back to work Monday, and went, Brian, look, you need to get hold of this one because it's rubbish.
Rubbish, yeah.
You know, yeah. And you look at it seems to have come from the this thread on North Stand Chat, of all places, that's debated the whys and wherefores as to Yves Bissouma being on the front of the shop and Lewis not being on the front of the shop. So
someone
there
else's
you go.
Turn, that was all. Yeah. But
I'll
ask this question. We're still on Lewis Dunk. I'm going to ask this because you actually did touch on it just now, Paul. You said he's getting better every year. Now, on the pitch, we can see that. We know that the platform that he started at when he made his league debut, including, I must hasten to add, a very pickled AD at Milton Keynes shouting at Lewis Dunk by calling him Tommy Elphick. But no, you said he's improving year on year. I mean, is
same
that
barbers. Definitely on, same
on,
barbers.
On and off the pitch. I mean, does that. Has he changed since he was officially made club captain? Have you seen a change in the person off the pitch and behind the scenes?
I wouldn't say he's changed because that's not what he's about. You know, he's Lewis and he's the same old Lewis he's always been. But I think he takes on a new level of responsibility and I think he's embraced that. Right. And I think he's been a good captain for the club. You know, he does what the captain needs to do. Now, when you're not the captain, you're not doing that. So you don't see that side of the player. Okay. But he's been great. He's been good. You know, he sort of leads by example. He does what the captain needs to do. Yeah, absolutely. But I think he's like a fine wine. As he gets older, he gets better and better. And I think that's testament to him and his character that he never sits down and thinks he's the finished article. Now, today, when I interviewed him after he signed his contract, I said, Lewis, you know, we've got this absolute wealth of brilliant centre-halves. We've got three potential England players, four, I suppose, if you count Dan Byrne as well, because although I think he's played largely at left-back, you've got the captain of Ireland. We've just brought Joel Veltman from Ajax, you know, regular in the Dutch team. You know, you've got this plethora of ability. Then you've got Matt Clark, Leo Ostergaard, Hayden Roberts, you know, working your way down.
You went, I'm off, that's it, see ya.
No, but I sort of said to him, you know, do you have a bit where you can, not relax, because that's not the right word, but you're on a firmer footing because you've got the armband, you know you're going to play. And he said, no, I can never think that way, because the moment I start thinking that way, that's the moment when my game drops off, you know. And I think that's Lewis all over, you know, He wants to win. He wants to get better. He never thinks of himself as the finished article. And I think that's why you see this constant progression in him. And he does get better and better and better. I mean, you look at the Arsenal goal. That epitomises the Lewis Dunk we know.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, Paul,
he's so desperate to score that goal.
Absolutely.
But Paul, I mean, the question I was going to ask was, and I see this as a real feather in the cap for the club, really, because obviously Lewis has obviously got that one England cap and he's obviously hungry for more. If he had have gone to a Chelsea, to a Man United, to Man City. He would have a lot more chance, or Leicester or Wolves, or something like that. Well, yeah, but he would have had a lot, possibly had a lot more chance of actually getting into that squad for the next summer's Euros. It's been held over. So, yeah. I mean, the fact that he's decided to stay here, I think he, I still think he can actually force himself into that squad. And he sees the fact that with a sign of the likes of Adam Lallana, he can actually progress and actually still make it into that squad.
Yeah, he does. I think you're right. I think he could almost, if he wanted to leave Brighton, I think he could almost name his destination. I think there'd be a lot of suitors for him. I mean, interestingly, after the Manchester City game, as we were in the tunnel, you know, Pep Guardiola had a conversation with Graham Potter, and you know, the words he said about Lewis were incredibly positive. He also said he tried to sign Bruno when he was at Valencia as a backup for Danny Alves. Yeah, but Bruno wanted to carry on playing and stayed with Valencia, which, you know, which I thought was fascinating, you know, and underlined the ability and the quality of Bruno that you've got Pep Guardiola wanting to take him to Barcelona. But, you know, I think that's the level. But I think Lewis is here. He's committed here. His family are settled. He's just built his own house locally. He's committed here, you know. And I think we as Albion fans should be grateful for that. You know, it's fantastic. He's never made overtures to get away. You know, he's always been committed.
Have clubs come round sniffing seriously, or they just sort of like?
If I'm honest, Al, I wouldn't be privy to that. That would be a conversation between probably Dan Ashworth, Paul Barber, Tony Bloom, and the manager. And maybe the manager's coaching staff as well. Yeah. But I wouldn't be privy to that. Paul Winstanley as well, of course, on that side of things. Yeah. But
And from Lewis's point of view, he's a hero here. He's a big fish in a smaller pond. If he went somewhere else, he might be swallowed up and not necessarily have the same adulation or playing time.
I genuinely don't think he would be. I think he'd be a regular wherever he goes. You know, if he was to go, which I don't think he ever will. yeah, I think he'd be a regular. I mean, I look and you kind of watch what other players do and how other players play. I can remember watching John Stones against Scotland at Wembley when we were still in a championship and seeing him with my stepson and saying, for me, Dunkey's a better player. And I think Stones got given a real torrid night by Scotland, even though England won 3-0. He got sort of dragged all over the place. And I can remember sitting there thinking, this guy's no defensively is Lewis is better than him. People talk about on the ball, and I think Lewis has shown in the last season, you know, what he can do on the ball. We just perhaps didn't have that opportunity before because of the way we played, the evolution of the club, the evolution of the team. But as I said at the beginning, you know, we kind of, those of us that have seen Dunkey play in League One under Gus Poyet, under Oscar Garcia, we'd seen him play that way. We knew he could. So,
and frankly, it's about time Ernie Tug Wilson's record went, isn't it?
Well, he's only got another 266 games to go, Al. So it's
He's over halfway.
You wouldn't. But, you talk against it. He's been on the pitch for almost. I think other than suspensions, I don't think he's. You know, touch wood, he won't get an injury. But other than suspension, which I guess that's just.
Well,
you're
even
going to get that as a centre half.
Suspensions are coming fewer and further between. I mean, I think that the season we missed out.
You're right there, Al, and you've got to give Chris Hughton some credit there because I think Chris worked with him, you know, and very quickly. And even going back to Sammy, you know, those yellow cards that he was getting more than he perhaps would get now, some for dissent. Yeah, they've dried up. So I think, you know. Credit Lewis.
Has of the own goals as well. But, you know, that's, which is, thank God for that.
Yeah,
those were unlucky, mate. Those were unlucky. I mean, that's
the way he plays. You know, that's the style of play that he plays in because he's not afraid to throw himself in front of something when it's last ditch. And you're going to get that. It's a sort of hazard of the job that he does. So,
point in case, AD, yes. Lewis Dunk will throw himself. What does Glenn Murray do? Sticks his hands in front of his face because he thinks he's beautiful. There's your
difference. It is a beautiful face. Glenn still says that shouldn't have been a penalty.
So do I.
I agree. I think that's the most ridiculous handball rule going. If you put your hand in front of your face to protect your face and it hits your hands, well, to me, it's not handball.
But I mean, you mentioned John Stones there. I still remember him playing for Barnsley and getting beat 5-0 at the Amex. But yeah, that's another story for another
And being day. Subbed after 35 minutes, I think.
That was a ridiculous game. Okay, I mean, just before we move on. So basically, we're delighted that Lewis is here. 5 years.
That's brilliant news, that is
a long. That's a long contract. Not many players get 5-year contracts. So, I mean, we're absolutely delighted about it, and we're looking forward to seeing him when we're back in.
I mean, that will take him up to him being, 33 years old? So,
33 years of age,
All good news.
But, okay, I mean, let's go back to the start of the lockdown then, Paul. The club was at the forefront of media communications throughout the lockdown. You must have been proud of the way the club led from the front.
Well, I think that's sort of testament to the owner, to the, you know, the chief exec, and the ethos that's here and has been here for a while at the football club. You know, even going back to the sort of with Dean days, we always tried to be as transparent and communicate as much as we possibly could with the fans. Sometimes it, you know, as Paul Barber will say, it's not always what you want to hear, but we'll tell you how it is. And I think, you know, I've seen Paul operate in two, you know, very different, very tragic crises. Shoreham air crash being one, and obviously the pandemic being the other. And I think that's when you get a real understanding for how someone operates, how they work, and you see their real, you really see their skill set. It's easy when you're winning promotion and you're, you know, spraying bottles of champagne. It's through the hard times when you learn about people, and I think that's where I've been really proud of the club, and to have the people leading from the front that have been leading from the front. So
But the communication strategy surely must be set up by yourself as well. I think me and Paul deserve over modesty here, Paul.
No, me and Paul had a conversation. Tim Dudding as well deserves a bit of credit. He sort of said, look, this is what we can do with Zoom, if you know, and then I think we were set. We said, well, let's do a press conference with the manager. And then I sort of thought about it, and I thought, well, the manager's going to get asked a load of questions that Paul really needs to answer. You know, so rather than him just sort of bat away question after question, let's put Paul up next to him. And then Paul, off the back of that, said, I think we should do these weekly during lockdown. What do you think? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. It's a great idea. You know, if you're willing to do that. The thing that surprised me more than anything, I thought other clubs would probably do the same, and obviously some did. Some did perhaps with their local media, but it perhaps is not as many as I thought would.
Any reason why?
So they came there. I don't know, and it perplexes me a little bit. But I always think you're better to over communicate than under communicate. That surprised me a little bit. We got to a point, and I sat down with Paul, because we were doing these press conferences on a Thursday, and what the journalists will do is store up bits for Saturday, Sunday, and literally, I think one of the papers called him, accused him of a talkathon in one of the Sunday red tops. And I can remember ringing Paul at that point and saying, Paul, I think we should just tone things down a bit for a week, not go quiet completely, but let's change how we do things slightly. Maybe make the presses a bit shorter so they can't store up loads of stuff, and maybe just, you know, control it a little bit more through our communications channel. So we slightly changed the tact midway through to deal with that. And that was also around about the time where we were getting slated for allegedly not wanting to play, which really, really peed all of us off within the football club.
It did us, believe me, it did us as well.
That really wasn't the case. That at no point did we, and then I think Paul had come out and countered that by saying, well, look, if we end up finishing the bottom three, and we get relegated, we'll take our medicine. You know, it's what we deserve. You know, which I thought was, again, great of him. You know, we can set up the process, but ultimately he's got to hit the notes. You know, and I thought he did again. He got the tone right. He was spot on neutral venues. Took a lot of flack for that position because people were briefing to the contrary that we wouldn't be able to play. But to us, it just made no sense whatsoever. Mm. You know, the whole thing was clearly conceived by somebody that didn't really understand football.
But I mean, going back to what you were saying about that Red Top story, I mean, from the conversation I was having with various people amongst the press.
Oh, by the way, yeah, that was the lone voice. The rest of the press, yeah.
They were thankful. They were saying, "Well,
I think
you're doing
annoyed,
it."
Yeah, I think that annoyed some of them because it was that they were, hang on a minute, you know, we're in an industry which is struggling at the moment. We've got nothing to write about. And the one bloke that's sitting up there every week and giving us stuff to write about is now being criticised for doing that. It talk about biting the hand that feeds you, you know. And don't get me wrong, there was a couple of things during the issue with the Mail on Sunday, which I think was an error and an error of judgment on their behalf. And fair play to them, they apologised straight away, put their hands up, and.
Which piece are you talking about?
I think that was that Lewis and Glenn had been to the chairman to say all the talk of neutral venues and trying to avoid playing was creating an aura of negativity around the club. And it just, I don't know where it come from, but the journalists I spoke to had it from a fairly decent source, trusted that source. But made the mistake of not checking with us. You know, that happens. You just take it on the chin, you move on.
Yeah, because we had Paul Hayward on the show a couple of weeks ago, you know, obviously the multi-award. Admittedly, he would have been slightly biased, but I think he was mentioning about the nature of the lockdown, about how appreciative certainly he and probably best part of the press corps were of the Albion being so open and so... welcoming to the press and basically having, you know, for the press having someone to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been interesting if every club had done it. We wouldn't have come out with that praise. That wasn't the reason we did it. So the reason we did it was because we felt we owed the fans as much information as we could possibly give them through that, you know, through that period. I don't know. I like to think we have a closer bond with our supporters. I know we upset them sometimes with certain things we do, and people don't see the reason why sometimes, you know, it's a bit like the donkey thing on the front of the shop because, you have to sort of, sometimes you can't articulate it and you can't explain it for a variety of reasons. But I do like to think we've got a better relationship with our fans and a closer bond with our fans than perhaps others do. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That bridge, if anything.
And how we fought to save the club and which you were going to...
Yeah, but I think you've still got to have that mentality to do that. Look at Charlton, where they are now and how, distanced the club and the fans are there, having obviously worked so hard as a collective and to get the club back to the Valley. And you know, if you sort of take that relationship for granted and you don't service that relationship, then you end up very quickly where they've ended up. And, you know, there's times where you'll ring me and say, what's going on here? And I'll be like, yeah, unfortunately, we've got to do this because, and these are the reasons why, but, you know, for various sensitive reasons, we can't sort of divulge why we're doing something. Sometimes it's never easy. But I do think, the good thing, and it comes from the top down, it comes from Tony, it comes from Paul, and we've always said that, you know, the sort of tone that they set, the policies that they set, it flowed through the club. And I think that's why, you know, the credit goes to Tony and Paul and rightly should do. And, you know, to a lesser point, those of us around, but also, you know, the manager, the technical director, et cetera, et cetera, you know, they all buy into that way of doing things.
Okay. Well, look, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be sponsored by the wonderful oldfootballshirts.com as ever. And Phil has given us a shirt to have a look at. And
it's minging.
Have a look at this and tell me what you think of this. And is it on your away shirt?
No, it's not.
I'll give it that.
Is it the same colour?
No, it's black with a sort of red and yellow collar or trim on the collar and on the sleeves, and what looks to be a wolf on the sort of coming in from the hip into the centre of the shirt. Mm-hmm. It's got a red sort of splash across the chest and a yellow splash underneath that. It's got two weird sponsors on there.
I mean, it kind of looks a little
Civicat
bit like
Civicat and what looks like to be Betpi. Made by Legia, L-E-G-E-A.
Heard of them before?
They're Italian.
Well, I'm guessing here that
they do a lot of Spanish clubs, but I think they might be Italian. Yeah, a bit like
yeah.
Hang on, you know this is 80s, because I was actually about to say that the main sponsor's logo seems to have a kind of green, white, and red sort of slash across it, which kind of
It's got sort of like an Italian flag as part of the design, hasn't it?
It is Italian. It does kind of look a little bit. If Belgium were a club side, it would look like they're awake.
Oh yeah, that's a fair point.
Well, the wolf coming makes me think AS Roma.
It's not Roma, no. But I'll put you out of your misery. Club? But it is Italian. It's an Italian club. Yes.
Is it a Roman club?
I will tell you.
Is it a club side as well? Or
is it a club side? Yeah. But okay. This is the 2013 to 2014 away shirt of Italian Serie B side Unione Sportiva Lecce, normally referred to as Lecce. They play at the 31,533 capacity Stadio Ettore Giardinaro Via del Mare, which is on the road that leads to the seaside. The team goes under a number of nicknames, one of which being I Salentini, which it refers to their region of Italy, at the heel of the boot of Italy, and I Giallorossi, which translates to the yellow and reds, which is their home colours. They were formed in 1908 and joined the Italian league system in the early 1930s. In 1959, they were promoted to Serie C, where they spent the next 17 years before climbing the leagues and making it to Serie A for the first time in 1985. In 2012, they were implicated in the, a word that's Italian, match-fixing scandal, and subsequently had their club head president banned from football and found themselves relegated back to Serie C. Since then, they've made it back to the top flight. All right. Although they were relegated to Serie B last month and basically being a bit rubbish at football. The current squad has no one particularly of note, but historically the likes of former Chelsea manager Antonio Conte, Giorgio Popescu, who played for one season with Spurs and turned out for the side, more recently to the UK is Danny Di Ciccio, who played on loan there in the 1990s. Despite due diligence, I cannot find even a tenuous link to the Albion, although I'll leave you with former defender, the ones we named, Aldo Sensible, who played for Lecce in the 1960s and managed them in the 90s. Thanks for that very much, Phil. Of course, you can see that and many more shirts on oldfootballshirts.com. Over 110,000 shirts there now of all varying different designs,
colours,
and,
hues,
horror stories. And actually, Paul, we did the shirt of our years recently, and you came up with the promotion winning shirt as your favourite. Are you just going to spare by that? Or was that, because I mean, you also said that was the only one you had at home.
I still love the not the Nobo version, but the Phoenix Brewery Adidas shirt. Very similar, obviously. Not the one that the current shirt's based on. It, I think it was the one that followed that one. But I do still love that. I still have a Sabutio team somewhere at home.
Fantastic.
God knows where, of that team. So with the three stripes across the shoulders, or two stripes, three stripes.
And this then is my favourite Albion shirt of all time.
Thin
well,
pinstripe so. Across what would be termed in my body shape as the beer belly. That was my favourite.
So how's the new shirt gone down, Paul?
I mean, it seems to have gone down a storm with everyone. Interestingly, I was chatting to Billy Reid yesterday, and we did our big photo shoot for all the broadcasters yesterday in the dome at the club. Where they basically come in and get all those shots that you see on the TV, before games, promoting games, all of that sort of stuff, all the very dramatic pictures. And we were sort of looking at it, and he said, I wasn't sure to start with, but the more I see it, the more I like it. And I think that's the sort of general consensus. I know there are those that don't like the fact we've moved away from the stripes. I sort of spent the whole week before the Burnley game, said to everybody, just be prepared. As soon as we launch this, people are going to hate it. But actually, the general consensus when you look down the sort of notifications on the social media channels for the club, was overwhelmingly positive. More so than I can ever remember.
This is such a massive irony, I find. It's like, historically, we are blue and white stripes. I mean, I've worked it out. This will be our 23rd season. Since 1901 of not wearing blue and white stripes, or blue and white stripes in any given sort of variable capacity. You could argue that this is blue and white stripes, but you really are pushing it. White pinstripes doesn't count. This is a plain blue shirt.
Count the old Santex pinstriped blue shirt?
Yeah, I did.
Did you count that as stripes?
Yes, I would have said that's probably one of my worst shirts. And therein lies the irony. I do like the Phoenix Brewery shirt, the mid-80s shirt. But only in its own context. But if I was to love a Brighton shirt, then and most people will do this, they'll love a shirt which they most associate with success. So for me, it's always going to be the 78-79 Buchter shirt. It's also the first one I owned. I was an 8-year-old, 9-year-old. But they're in kind of it's bizarre that this shirt has gone down so well, and yet the traditionalists will go to the other extreme and say, this isn't us.
But isn't it because it's just a really nice shirt?
Yes,
and actually, we still haven't really done it, but I sort of jokingly said, and it reminded me of Euro 96 when I think the FA did, the England kit should be white, blue, white, and for the away kit, red, white, red, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They should never change. People love those colours. And I'm kind of going against what I've just said there.
You're going to go grey, aren't you?
Well, they went grey in 96, didn't they? And the big marketing slogan.
They called it Indigo, didn't they? Which it isn't.
Yeah, it looks great with jeans. Whereas I think this one, the reason people like it, and you look at Bobby wearing it in the video, and the actor/model that we had in the video with his family at the end, and they're both wearing jeans, and it looks fantastic with jeans.
Blue and white shirts, and
of course, we're going to kick off.
Design.
We'll kick off against Chelsea, and the lads are going to wear jeans. So on the Monday night, joking aside. No,
I mean someone said. I think it was our friend Vicky Reese who described it. He says it's more British Caledonian than Phoenix Brewery, which I think sums it up.
Yes, absolutely. It's not the cup final kit. It's the 83-84 kit, one we wore against Liverpool. In that game at the Goldstone. That's the one for me.
You mentioned that they were doing the filming for television. That leads me on to the next point now. And this is, I just wanted to, I mean, from a media perspective, from your point of view, how was it having all of the games televised during that last period?
It's not the same for the fans, is it, at all? As a fan, do you know what's really weird? If you'd said to me before the lockdown, that we're going to pause the season at this point, you'll go this many weeks without any football, I'd have been like, I'm not going to survive. I find it hard enough in a summer when there is no international tournament. So, but bizarrely, it didn't bother me because I think, I don't know why. But
I think there was the fact we were all in it together. There was this lockdown.
Yeah, maybe it was that, and but I find summers when there's no international football just I'm at a loss. I have to really work hard to fill my time.
Don't you do
and go and do something at weekends? I do a bit of cricket, Al, and I don't mind a bit of cricket. And in fairness, last year I saw a fair bit of the cricket. Lucky enough to go to the World Cup final, saw a bit of the Ashes, you know, and it fantastic day out. Me and Steve Gibbon and a couple of other pals of mine, we had a brilliant day at the Oval, the last day of the Ashes, and we saw that terrific with the fourth day. We were up there on the Sunday. It was one of the best days of the summer. We had a brilliant day out. Really brilliant day out there. So yeah, I like a bit of the cricket. I always try and do the games at Arundel. I think that's
it's a
fantastic
fantastic. Go up and have a bit of breakfast in the town during the morning, and then
now you're talking.
Yeah, spend the day up there, and I usually do the 4-day game. I don't bother with the limited overs stuff up there because it just gets too packed. But
no, you nice can't see anything, can you?
No, it's nice to go and just sit and relax and watch a bit of the 4-day game, you know, the county championship. But, I, you know, I've watched a bit of the tests this summer. But, no, in all honesty, you get to the summer and it's like, right, I'll get the DIY done around the house.
Oh, wait, that's the same with everyone, mate.
Yeah.
But back to the point, though. I mean, like, obviously, all of the games were on television. Yeah, I mean, do you actually think there is a danger that some people will get too used to watching from home?
I hope not. And let's be honest, the broadcasters don't want that because, you know, I thought they did an amazing job of when you watch the game, you felt like you were watching a normal game to a point, you know. Okay, you got the odd one where it went just wide of the post. And you got the cheer, but then you get that in normal football, don't you? You know, we that I think that's the most embarrassing thing.
But
you do that thing, don't you, where you're so subconscious, you're looking around you, and you think, "Who spotted me? Who hasn't spotted me?" The worst one I hate is, and I did this a couple of times in an empty stadium, so the players and the coaching staff only ever appeal when they know that there's an appeal there, whereas we are the most optimistic people in the world, aren't we? And a couple of times I'd give like, "That's a penalty," and then you're sort of in an empty stadium and you're looking around and you're thinking, "Oh god, I've made a right TIT of myself here." So I did that a couple of times, it comes back to the old press box etiquette. There's times when you can't help yourself, you know.
I mean, I've got quite good at invoking my inner David Coleman, going 1-0, and rather than going disco mental. But it's the whole behind closed goals, it was weird. Obviously you've had a lot of contact with the players throughout this. You probably speak to them daily. Now, do you think that some players benefit from not having the crowd on their backs, particularly in some cases?
I don't know if it's the crowd on their backs. I think I always remember Peter Taylor used to say it this way, and I can remember when he used to get a little bit of stick, and you know, because towards the end when we were trying to get over the line and get promoted, there was a couple of sort of rather dour nil-nils because we just didn't want to concede and just get
the
point.
Come on, Taylor, this is rubbish.
Yeah, and he would always say, well, maybe not so much that type of thing, but when the crowd were getting nervous and tetchy and edgy and those sort of things, he said, you know, that we're all feeling that way. We all feel that way. It's natural. It's a natural way to feel. You know, you occasionally get that. I think there were players that, yeah, maybe did, but I think that's true at every club up and down the country. I think maybe did it suit the more technical teams, and I'd like to think of us as that. You know, you look at Man City, but then it's interesting, isn't it? Because as much as Man City blew everybody away in the Premier League, it was almost like glorified friendlies for them. You know, they'd qualified for Europe, subject to their
appeal
appearance in the court, and they didn't really have a lot to play for, you know, because they weren't going to catch Liverpool. So it's kind of glorified friendly. So their big thing was obviously going into the Champions League, and I didn't think they were particularly great in that. And I think the one thing that the mainstream media haven't sort of picked up on, and I think it's I haven't seen it anywhere, but it's been at the forefront of my mind. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'd say otherwise, but I think the French sides have done so well because their season got back, curtailed. Mm. So you're looking at Lyon, obviously, okay, they got to the semi and lost in the semi. PSG have finally got to a Champions League final. I think the fact that they were fresh, you cannot underestimate that.
Lyon, I mean, obviously the scoreline says different, but Lyon played very, very well in that semi.
I watched that game. I thought City were poor by City standards. And then when you sort of compare and contrast to Man United, I thought Manchester United were unlucky rather than really poor. Mm. You know, I felt the stick that Martial got was perhaps a little bit harsh. You know, some of the stuff on the radio that week that I heard, I thought was a little bit harsh. And I'm sure we all listened to Glenn on the breakfast show, and I thought he actually articulated it really well. Enough credit wasn't given to the goalkeeper in either game, actually, even the Copenhagen game, where United were very dominant and obviously, you know, thrashed them 1-0. But I think it's been difficult for the English side to a point. The German side's obviously finished their season much quicker, much sooner. Mm-hmm. So again, they had a bit more freshness. So I don't think there's any surprise to me when you look, you know, Leipzig did so well, Lyon did so well, PSG and Bayern Munich perhaps more expected to do that. So I do feel a little bit sorry for City, in as much as I think that was a sort of tough ask for them on the back of a grueling Premier League campaign. And like I said, you know, they were almost glorified friendlies, but you've still got to go out there and you've still got to put the effort in. You've still got to play the game. You know,
you can also argue. I mean, and obviously the cup, they had the FA Cup, but City were matched up. So and the other sides probably were.
AD, I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think people underestimate the power of rest, relaxation, recuperation. You know, letting the body recuperate, letting the body recover. You know, I think that if you spoke to the sort of medical experts, and I think that's one thing that I really like the way we do things here. You know, the guys know what they're doing, and sometimes they will say, we shouldn't train today. You know, the players need to rest. They need a break. And Graham's sort of seems to be very clued up on that way of doing things.
Okay. Well, let's move it on to the feedback from Monday night then. Obviously, you hosted the forum with Paul Barber and Teddy Garrow this week. There was a lot of very good points made. Paul was on fire. I think he was trying to get Nick Steve Grant's job, actually. He was particularly jovial mood. But it was very, very interesting. Lots of really good points made. But I mean, we're desperate to get fans back into the stadium. We don't know when that's going to happen. The R rate's risen again this week, so I mean that could put a spanner in the works.
Basically, Paul, what's the latest from the club? I mean, as much as we had the
we kind of know as much as you guys. So at the moment, there's sort of a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. So you know, we're waiting on the government. We're prepared. We're ready. A lot of hard work has gone in by the legal team, the operations team, the ticketing team. And, you know, I thought Paul, as you said, was very good on Monday night. I also thought Jenny Gower, you know, we all know Jenny in the club and we know what good job she does. But obviously that was sort of her first of that type of appearance. And I think you could see the level of detail and Jen's worked around the clock to come up with these various solutions. And it's, you know, it's not as simple as saying we'll hold a ballot, you know. There'll be people listening that work in those sort of industries in terms of getting the software in place, developing the software, making sure the software works. Mm. You know, we've got the sort of technology now where potentially your ticket will be on your phone, a bit like when you go on an airplane and you use the boarding pass on your phone. Mm. You know, you're still, for those that perhaps haven't got the Android or the iPhone, they'll still be able to print at home. We just want to discourage that, you know. You know, a huge amount of work's gone into planning for every possible eventuality, whether that be a pre-season friendly, whether that be further into the season. We've done the prep, we've done the legwork, and we did the same with return to play. And I think, you know, we Paul and Tony do put us under a bit of pressure to get our ducks in a row and prepare for every eventuality. You know, I can remember going way back to the start of the Amex era when we were in a sort of staff training thing, and I think it was around about the time we re-signed Bobby Zamora, and the question was raised, you know, we re-signed Bobby Zamora, but in the shop we were short of Zeds. And the answer came back, well, you prepare for every eventuality, you know. You might not know that's going to happen, but you've almost got to be prepared for the, you know, anything could happen. So, you know, we might get an announcement tonight at 10 o'clock to say, right, you can let fans back in from Monday. We obviously have a couple of friendlies lined up at the Amex next Saturday, the following Saturday. Now, where those end up, who knows? But we're waiting on advice from the government and from the Premier League. And until we get that advice, we can't do anything. The thing that I can say to fans is we are prepared for whatever that eventuality will be. And even if that might be a very short notice period. So I think the key thing for the fans is keep an eye on the website, keep an eye on your emails, and just see what's coming out from the club. And be the other thing, read it very carefully, because sometimes it's a 3-page document that we're putting together because we're trying to cover every eventuality. So yeah, read it carefully. And what was really useful as well about Monday night, really useful, is there's 3 or 4 things that pop up that maybe we haven't thought of. You guys will look at things from your perspective, you know. I don't mean you two alone, but every fan looks at everything from their own perspective. So sometimes, that, you know, it's really helpful to have that feedback. And you might think, oh, well, they haven't thought of this. Or they haven't. I had a call from a 1901 club member yesterday saying, you know, I've got my 4 1901 club tickets. What do I do? And I was like, I'm pretty certain all you do is nothing, because your 4 will be automatically grouped together. And then if you're lucky in the ballot, it'll be a case of you letting us know the 4 people that are going to use those tickets. Went and checked it, and yeah, absolutely, that was the case. So, you know, I think there's the other thing that cropped up, I think, was to do with the price bracket. So we might need to do a bit of tweaking on that. So we'll tweak things and we'll move things, and as things come up, we'll, you know, if we need to tweak those plans, we will. But I think 99% of the legwork is there. We're now just sitting and, you know, and we, don't get me wrong, once we've got a plan, we've still got to activate that plan. So there's still a lot of work to do to activate it as well.
Okay. Well, all I would say is that, you know, in watching the forum and like I say, the number of what ifs coming in, which were, you know, they probably are infinite. You know, there's 23,000 seasons to get older, there's probably 23,000 what ifs. But all I would say is that from just, you know, the information coming out, and especially those that, and you mentioned earlier, those that haven't actually come across it before, would you do us a favour and thank Jenny Gow? Because this is someone who clearly was on top of their brief, came across very impressively, and you know, I think actually helped things to smooth things over. We could have had.
Yeah, I mean, Jenny's a really experienced operator, and yes, I will thank her. And I think we've had a lot of emails to that point as well this week. But, you know, you're talking about somebody that's worked at the, you know, worked at Fulham when they got to UEFA Europa League final, you know, ticketed games at Wembley.
Did they have enough Zeds?
You know, done a semi-final at Wembley for us, so she knows what she's doing, you know. Sure. I mean, I remember we did countless plans for playoff finals without actually using one of them, because we didn't need to in the end. But you know, when we played sort of Palace, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday in those playoff games,
all right, don't rub it in.
We were, yeah, but think about what it's like for us. You've done all that work, and then you don't get to go ahead and do the plan. Yeah. So, you know, we had plans in place and did a lot of work around those games. I mean, we even sort of had to sort of half plan for a cup final last season, you know, or the season before the one just finished, you know. So you're doing a lot of that work, and sometimes it never sees the light of day. So, you know, equally, I think Paul spoke about it on one of the press conferences. We had to have plans, and even at the moment, we're having to redo all our budgets because we don't know when the fans will come in. So we have to plan with a budget for 25%, no fans, 100%, 50%, you know. So it's constantly having to do all this work behind the scenes. So that's where it's created a huge amount of work, you know.
Sure. Okay, well, all of that information is, of course, on the club's website, and you can find out exactly how it affects you and how you'll be in the ballot, etc. Anyway, but we've got a little bit of time left. So I just want to talk a little bit about you, Paul, to be honest, because, I mean, you've been at the club a long time. I mean, you went from Scars and Stripes to the Albion in 1998, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
So, as publications in it. So you've worked for the club in all four divisions. So I'm just interested to know, how has your working day changed from when you first started at the club to what it is now?
So I can tell you, when I first started, it was very much geared around producing and getting out a match programme. Simple as that. You know, and a few other bits and bobs. When we got promoted after at the end of the 2001, mm-hmm, so when we went up to the third tier, the club asked me to come on board sort of full time, be the press officer, run the website back in those days, and social media was a mere twinkle in its father's eye, shall we say. And hadn't seen the light of day at that point. You know, youngsters listening to this won't believe we used to have a button on the fax machine that would fax out the press releases by fax to the likes of Southern Sound.
Hang on, printed word here, Paul. Printed word.
Yeah, we would type up a press release, pass it through the fax machine. You didn't have email in those days. You know, you'd fax press releases. All the player contracts were faxed through, you know. I mean, there's footage of Martin getting the decision letter by fax on the
page letter.
Oh, God, yeah, I've seen
that. For Falmer, you know, that fax machine in that corner of the office, there was a button which was press, and you pressed it automatically sent that to all the local media, you know.
Aren't all transfers still done by fax, though? Please tell me they are. I mean, that was the thing. Oh, we didn't get
the deadline day ones.
Yeah,
deadline day ones. No, I think it's more email nowadays. But until very recently, they were. You know, you always knew we were signing a player because you could hear Derek's typewriter going, oh, we must be, someone's going on loan, or we're signing someone, or, you know, there was something going on because Derek had sort of blown the cobwebs and the dust off the typewriter.
But you must in those nearly, what, 18, 20 years, you must have had some really good days, professionally, not just personally supporting Albion, but professionally and personally. And you must have had some challenging ones. I mean, can you give us a flavour of sort of the best and the worst?
I feel really guilty for saying this. And me and Dunkey said it earlier, but that Neil Mopay goal against Arsenal. Yeah. Because you'd literally had weeks and weeks of lockdown. And you kind of hit the pause button on being anxious. I always thought we'd be safe, and I kept saying that to Graham all through the season. We'd be fine, Graham, don't worry, we'd be fine, you know, and a manager won't sort of offer an opinion either way, but I was always convinced we'd be okay last season, pre-lockdown. You know, I never really bought into the sort of naysayers and the doom mongers. But obviously we got a little bit nervous at times. And but then when you've done that period in lockdown, you know, we took some unfair criticism and stick. And then to go out into that first game with 1-0 down, and you're like thinking, oh, you know.
You blew a raspberry to everyone, didn't you? Admit it, Paul.
No, I didn't. It was a brilliant moment. And I went down to the dressing room afterwards to get the players to come and do the media. And we were sort of elbow bumping and fist bumping and all of that. But that felt like a real, that was a lovely moment. Really lovely moment.
With your professional hat on, rather than your Albion supporters hat on, when Neil comes out and says what he said about Guendouzi, I mean, what are you thinking?
Oh, I was fine with that. I think it was an honest opinion. I think it's fine. I think players should speak more openly, and I think he rightly got some plaudits for saying it. You're kind of thinking, oh, this might ruffle a few feathers, but why shouldn't he be entitled to his opinion? Why should he be all sort of rent a quote and just sort of reeling out the cliches, etc., etc.? So no, I mean, we'd always encourage players to try and speak sensibly and openly. We wouldn't encourage them to be disrespectful to other players, but you know, let's be honest, he took a lot of stick on that pitch, and I think some of it unfairly. And if you look at what's happened at Arsenal since, I think
he's done him a favour, isn't he?
Well, I think his comments were probably justified. You know, it doesn't happen that often. I really like Neil. I think he's a real thinker. I think he's an incredibly hard working. I think we will see an even better player this season. I really do. I think he's got such a great temperament and great character on the pitch. So yeah, absolutely.
And 10 goals in your first season, and people forget how young he
makes him our eighth highest goal scorer in the
top. Don't underestimate that. Don't underestimate that. You know, that's a decent return. He probably should have got more. Mm-hmm. We probably deserve more. And that's not a criticism of him. It's more, you know, we didn't get the breaks. We didn't get the luck at times. So, and I think he will. I think he'll better that this season.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there because we are now out of time, unfortunately. So I've just got to say thank you to Alan West. Thank you to Paul Camlin. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar in association with Old Football Shirts on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on my podcast. If you want to hear more from Paul, of course, you can go to the Albion Roar YouTube channel. We can catch the show I did with Paul and Shirt of Our Years and hear more of these stories. But for now, thanks for listening, and we will see you very, very soon for the next Albion Roar. Thanks for listening. Soldiers, which stood at my shoulders.